This is In the Spotlight, where we shine the light on college students, our lived experiences, and the research to help us thrive. We're coming to you from the Clemson Honors College as part of CCARE, a special research group in the Creative Inquiry Program. My name is Taryn. I'm a junior biological sciences major here at Clemson.
Hi, friends. My name is Ashley, and I'm a junior genetics major here at Clemson.
Hello, everyone. My name is Aaron. I am a junior computer science major and philosophy minor at Clemson.
Howdy, y'all. My name is Jason, and I'm a senior computer science major, political science minor here at Clemson. So how are we all doing today on a scale of 1 to 5?
Well, I'm at a 3. My week's going pretty well. I had a situation this morning that was a little bit difficult, but other than that, I had one exam. It went well, so I'm doing pretty good.
That's good. I hope the rest of your day gets better from here, but I'm glad you've had a good week so far. I would say that this week I'm sitting at about a 4, so it's been a pretty good week. I've been very, very productive this week, so looking forward to the rest of the week being the same.
I think I'm also at a 4 for some of the same reasons. I was pretty productive this week, and I'm happy to be on this podcast. So definitely one of my positives.
Yeah, I would say I'm also at about a 4. My productivity kind of comes in and out of existence at random times, but we're getting enough done and having some fun. So let's get into it. For the last several weeks, we've been researching social media and how it affects college students. And we're going to talk about this topic with you today. To start off, for everyone in the studio, what does your social media usage look like? Taryn, let's get this party started.
So social media, let's see. I have an Instagram account. I don't really use it. If anyone looks at it, it's blank. I get on Pinterest a lot. I like looking at the crafts and looking at the aesthetic fall videos. But as far as the social media I use the most is probably Snapchat. And that's just because my friends text me on that sometimes. So that's what my social media usage looks like. But I don't know if that's like the average use for people.
Well, what's your longest Snapchat streak?
I don't have any.
See, that's not the average use.
Oh, man. I also don't have any Snapchat streaks, but I don't use Snapchat too much. I would say my biggest use is definitely Instagram. But I also don't feel like I'm a typical user of social media. I tend to use social media more as a way to like express my creativity and things that are important to me. And that didn't used to be the norm, but I feel like recently in the past years, it's been more a place I go to like unwind and just kind of reconnect with myself.
And you do vlogging on YouTube, right?
Yes, I do use YouTube to do vlogs and like create college content just to like share my experience with people. And my Instagram is kind of like that as well. It's obviously not vlogs, but I do share a lot of like just tips and how I'm getting through life. So
love that plug. I, like Taryn, never post on Instagram ever. I have a Twitter, which I read a lot and I always regret it. Never a fun time. I use a lot of YouTube and Twitch, which I guess I consider social media.
Yes.
Twitch for background noise, but I think I heavily consume YouTube, especially after the pandemic.
Yes.
YouTube is big for me too. YouTube is actually, I forgot that's like a type of social media, but YouTube consumes majority of my time when I'm on my phone.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a TikTok or anything like that, but YouTube, yeah. I guess everything is going towards the format of having really short clips. And so YouTube has YouTube shorts, I guess, but they also just have like channels devoted to videos of like 30 seconds. So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. For me, I have a Snapchat. I use it mostly for chatting with groups of friends, but I also obviously look at people's stories and I do some scrolling. I have an Instagram. Instagram is probably where I do the most, like scrolling through the explore section, but also just looking at what your friends have. YouTube, like everyone else has said, I use YouTube a lot as well for looking up videos. I try to avoid scrolling because scrolling through YouTube, you just see a bunch of videos that you don't want to watch and it wastes my time. But and then I did have a LinkedIn. I still have a LinkedIn, but I deleted it off my phone because I hate LinkedIn. might talk more about that later. But that's my social media usage. So before we get into the specific research, just would like to get a general feel from everyone on what your perception is of social media and what you think about it.
I think that social media definitely has two sides. And there was something that, Jason, you said when we were talking one day about people consuming social media, like, wisely. So it's not about not being on social media, but it's about being able to consume it in a way that you can use your own, like, knowledge and wisdom to decipher what's for you and what's not for you. So I think that's the way that I see social media, is just as a place to have fun, but also be aware of some of the traps that you could fall in. Mm-hmm.
Yes, you get a lot of wisdom at this podcast.
I feel like I view it the same exact way. I use it, I think, mainly to entertain myself. And I tend to get informed a lot, but also there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of, I don't know.
So, like, do you go to social media for news? Or
Sometimes I'm made aware of some things through social media, and then I inform myself in other ways outside of social media. That tends to happen a lot, I'd say, actually.
That's true. I agree with that. It's definitely a place where I will see something, and I'm like, I don't know if this is the source that I need, but this made me aware about the topic.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think social media nowadays, there's just so many different avenues, and they all, I think, kind of serve different purposes. So I think how I perceive social media depends on, like, the platform I'm using. But I think for the most part, I see it as either a way of entertainment. So I'm going to social media of some kind to be entertained, to take my mind off things, or I'm going as a creative outlet. So it's somewhere I can go and, like, share pieces of my life or things that I've learned. But I wouldn't say it's usually a place that I go to absorb. So.
Yeah. For me personally, I think social media is useful and has a lot of good things that can be done with it. But I think the largest problem with social media is that the companies that design social media obviously want you to use it as much as possible because that's how they make a profit, and then they can get more of your data and sell it and do things like that. So the negative effect, I think, of this is social media is not necessarily designed to be the most useful. It's designed to be the most addictive and time consuming, which is where I get concerned a lot about my own social media usage and social media more broadly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think that, I mean, in one of the articles that we read, it did talk about some of the benefits of social media explicitly, like, social media has the ability to facilitate engagement in ways, especially on college campuses, because most organizations now do have an Instagram page or some type of page on Facebook. So as a college student, I'm not necessarily going to look at all the flyers that are around, you know, this building or other buildings. I'm going to go online and look for the organization that I'm interested in and see what events they have going on. And that will likely influence my decision to go to that event.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, we saw a lot during quarantine and just the time when we were away and really disconnected from people, that social media during that time could be a really good way to connect with people, which also parallels with people who aren't able to interact just because of some scenario or situation that they personally deal with. And social media is a good way for them to feel connected to people and still engage in ways that they normally couldn't. And I think all of us really began to rely heavily on it during the pandemic, which I think coming out of it, it's been a little hard to adjust to, like, how do I rely on it a little less for my social interaction?
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah.
Yeah, and I think an important thing to note about the research that Taryn is talking about with the social media and, like, isolation or, like, trying to get engaged as opposed to isolated is that also goes back to what you're talking about with critical social media engagement.
Right.
Because a lot of what that study looks at is how you use social media to look for organizations or people to like meet up with in person and engage with, and how that mm-hmm. can help people who feel isolated to feel less isolated. And I think it's important to note that like when you use social media to try and be deliberate about looking for these kinds of opportunities and not just scrolling or looking at celebrity social media, because that aspect of it wasn't part of the study and isn't the type of thing that probably is going to help you feel less isolated or feel more engaged with your peers around you.
Yeah, I think that I, especially during the pandemic, I definitely used it to replace, you know, in-person mm-hmm. interactions. Yeah. And it really is something that I've been looking into a lot, is parasocial relationships, especially like one-sided relationships that you have with like celebrities or just people who are famous or influencers. And that kind of, yeah, replaces the need to go out and go to like events and be searching for events, because you like, I have these people that I'm getting to know and learning about the events going on in their lives and stuff like that.
So Aaron, what are some of the ways you used it to replace interactions during the pandemic? Are you a Discord gamer? Because I'm a Discord gamer sometimes.
No. I just, you know, live vicariously through their lives. Mm-hmm. I watch them do fun things and play video games while I sit there.
Which I think is interesting, because I think that when we watch those things and we feel personally connected to those people and have that relationship, what we're lacking the most from social media is being poured back into. So you are watching other people and you are connecting with them, but you don't have people making connections with you in the same mm-hmm. way, which is where what we were saying before, it's really important to take what you're learning and consuming to make those connections in person by going to these events that you see, or reaching out to that person to get lunch or something like that, and taking that step outside of social media.
Right. And I think sometimes like the idea that Aaron was talking about of like the parasocial relationships goes back to some of the, I guess, negative effects of social media that we had seen when we were reading some of the research articles, along the lines of just seeing other people doing fun things and mm-hmm. you feel connected to them. But then you look at your life and you get confused on why your life doesn't necessarily look like theirs and why you're not able to do the things that they do. But I think that's part of that critical engagement with social media, is realizing some of those things are not the way they seem or are perceived to be.
Yeah, one of the first articles we read on social media and like college student risk behaviors introduces like the comparison between the social norms theory and misperceptions in social media. The social norms theory is like, our behavior is influenced by our misperceptions of how our peers think and act. So, and the key, I think, to that is the misperceptions part. Social media, you can really put up whatever, like the best parts of your life. And it's also not fully representative of a certain population. So like if you're looking at social media for college students, not everybody posts on social media. Mm-hmm. And also they just post certain parts of their life. So it makes you want to conform, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there were the two articles that we read that I think kind of relate to this idea would be, one was on college students and drinking, and the other was on body dysmorphia. And so the college students and drinking article just kind of talked about how people overperceive what percentage of other individuals drink or how much they drink based on what's on social media. And people actually underperceive how much they post about drinking on social media. And I think the interesting aspect of this is just that we don't recognize, one, like Aaron said, that people don't do everything that they do on social media all the time. That's not their entire life. And I think sometimes we don't recognize also what we're posting. So we don't realize how we're conforming to a specific view of things or how we're putting ourselves out there, which can be, I think, kind of dangerous in terms of, this is publicly available, everyone can see this, or if not everyone, 600 followers sometimes, mm-hmm. a large number of people. I think that's something we have to keep in mind when we're posting on social media, is being very critical about whether or not it's actually worth putting this image out there or putting this out there.
Yeah, I think that goes along with the article you're talking about, in the sense that we have to be aware of why we want to post things. Like, are we posting these because we want people to perceive us in a certain way? Or are we posting this just because this is like something that we just want to share with people? This is a really big important step in our lives, something like that. So I think just like being aware of why we're posting things. Because in the article about body dysmorphia, it talked a lot about how sometimes people will post things that, you know, they look good in the picture, but their friend doesn't, and they don't really care what their friend looks like. Or they post something so that people will perceive them in a certain way with this very specific intention. And there's also a lot of editing and filtering. Wait,
you're telling me filters aren't 100% real?
Oh, yes. So, yeah, I think filtering and that sort of stuff, it just changes a lot about how we view other people. So,
yeah, Ashley showed me this one Instagram person. They like post their original photo and then the edited photo, mm-hmm. and it's completely different.
Yeah. And the edited one, you can't even really tell. Like, if you didn't see the original, it looks completely normal.
That's wild. That's so wild.
Yeah.
I think a really interesting thing that's going on in the news right now that relates really strongly to this is the Wall Street Journal released a set of leaks from Facebook. It's called the Facebook Files, if you're interested in checking it out. And Congress is actually having hearings on this right now and thinking about regulating Facebook. Because basically these internal documents all show Facebook in research knew about a lot of the problems that we're talking about with social media. Body dysmorphia is a big one. There was a lot of research showing that Instagram was causing body dysmorphia, particularly in teen girls, but more generally as well. And Facebook essentially did not take a lot of options to respond. And one thing to note about Instagram and like this idea of body dysmorphia is it's somewhat stronger on Instagram because the culture on Instagram is very, like Ashley was kind of talking about, posting your best photos, editing things. It's not extemporaneous. Like, you're not just doing this off the cuff. So it gets particularly bad on Instagram because everyone's trying to post this best case image of themselves, which makes everyone else feel like, oh, I could never look as good as this other person because they didn't spend as much time. They wouldn't like naturally edit their image when they see it in the mirror. So I think that's kind of an interesting thing.
That is almost a reason why I think that I don't post on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I'd be much more likely to post a picture on Snapchat because I feel like the standard of editing photos on Snapchat is much lower. It's just supposed to show what's happening at the time in your life. But on Instagram, I'm supposed to take this photo and then go edit it, show it to my friends, figure out which caption I want to put on here. And by that time, I have spent like an hour and a half trying to post one photo. And that's too much for me. So then I just ignore it all. But then it makes me think like, why do I feel like I should buy into that pressure of doing that? But I guess that goes back to the social norms theory. Yeah. Like, everybody's filtering and editing these photos. Mm-hmm. So now I feel like I need to do that too to participate in Instagram.
Well, it's also like Jason was saying earlier about how these apps are designed to make you basically be addicted to them. But like, if you're not buying into the things that like the filters and the aesthetic feed, then you're not getting as many likes necessarily. You're not getting as many comments. You're not getting as many views. And then these apps, they don't show your stuff to your friends. So you're no longer seeing these just normal pictures anymore. So.
Yeah. And I think with Instagram, an interesting observation that I've seen on Instagram is like, particularly like when girls post a photo and it's heavily edited, there's like the comments is like a long line of people like being like, yes, that's great. Like, or like, you look so good. And I think like there's definitely a good positive encouragement aspect to this. But there's also like for individuals who are struggling with like how they feel about their body, I think being out there and constantly seeing other people get praise for their body on these heavily edited photos can definitely have some negative effects to it.
Yeah. And then once you post your own photo and edit it, if you get that validation, it becomes your source of validation or rejection. If you post something and you don't get those same likes or that same response, it'll affect you and how you feel about yourself and all that. So you're letting it just determine like how you feel about yourself.
Yeah, I think a lot of why I shifted how I consume social media is because of this. And I think I used to follow a lot of bloggers and just people who, like, their whole brand was to post these pictures that were just like them in like the best outfits with like their Starbucks in hand, like perfect picture. And I think I would scroll through my feed and then I would leave feeling more discouraged than when I showed up. But when I changed how I consumed social media, so I stopped following those people and I started following things that were meant to like lift me up. So now I really don't see a lot of images of people, but I'll see a lot of just like quotes or things that people drew on like Procreate or something like that. But it's a lot more inspirational and I leave feeling like I learned something or like feel more filled up. But like when I didn't have that filter on, it was never a positive experience.
Yeah. Just to highlight on Ashley's comments, 50% of the podcasters in this room do currently have Starbucks. So we do like Starbucks. But.
Yes. Yep. No hate on Starbucks. No. No. We have three of them on campus. They're definitely a place that I frequent, but,
yeah. I mean, yeah. We're college students. Yeah. We needed to survive.
I get dragged into Starbucks.
So. Yeah. One other thing, I think, coming back to that Facebook Files leak that I was talking about, I think this is actually incredibly important with social norms theory, is the way that comment sections and posts are suggested to you. So Facebook has a metric for how it suggests the top post. It's called Meaningful Social Interaction, or MSI is how they abbreviate it. And essentially, the longer the comment stream, the more likely a post will be pushed on the top. And Facebook's internal research showed that the effect this was having was that the most polarizing, the most anger-generating posts were the ones that were being pushed to the top of people's social media feeds. I think this is important for social norms theory because when we see the norms in the comment section in the posts being the most hateful or most aggressive take on the political issues, but anything in general, that kind of normalizes in our day-to-day discourse for us to be very at each other's throats and I think angry about things instead of actually critically engaging or being like calm and respectful about other people's views. And I think that's one of the big things when Congress had their hearings on it that they were talking about is how can we fix this kind of problem with social media where it's furthering the most polarizing and most anger-generating content.
That's crazy. That's so wild.
I actually kind of experienced that with Twitter a little bit. I'm not sure if it's the same as pushing it to the top. I guess you can kind of follow certain topics and you can, you know, which I do. I tend to fill up my feed with a lot of more positive things. But oftentimes there'll be, you know, long, or like the ones that get a lot of likes or like polarizing things. And there's no dislike on Twitter. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
It's like, oh, this has a whole bunch of likes. You look at it, there's a whole bunch of hateful and aggressive people. And it does shape like how I sometimes interact with people because I'm afraid maybe they'll be, if they think this way, they might be aggressive towards me. But I think I do a very good job of approaching things very calmly and not to make people foreign to me when like they have an opposing view. But I don't know. I guess I don't use Facebook enough. So
yeah. Yeah. Facebook actually initially they used to order your feed by like people you follow and like the time of the post. And there's some push now from people in the company to go back to that against their current policy because that generates like it's more organic and the user chooses what to follow and then they just see everything posted as opposed to the algorithm having so much influence over what you see and what you consume and basically Facebook deciding the kind of content that you spend your most time looking at.
It's interesting because the algorithm they have now, I feel like produces this like endless scroll type of thing. Because I know before when it used to be just ordered by when people posted things, like I would get on the app and if the people I was following hadn't posted anything new, there was nothing new for me to consume. Mm. But also like I could scroll through and eventually like I would hit the bottom and I'd be like, oh, I'm all caught up, saw everything from all my friends, like we're good to go. But now I don't see everything that my friends are posting, and B, I could scroll for just ever and ever.
There is no end.
No.
Yeah. I think that makes me less likely to use Instagram because I feel mm-hmm. like when I go on Instagram, I want to see what Ashley posted and I want to see what Aaron posted and what Jason posted. I want to see what my friends are posting. I don't necessarily just want to see celebrity photos or these photos of people who are getting a lot of likes because they have the resources to build these photos and these videos.
Karen, are you saying that Aaron, Ashley, and I are not celebrities?
I'm kind of offended, to be honest. You guys are celebrities in my heart.
After this podcast.
Yeah, be sure to subscribe.
But that endless scrolling, I think, often leads to me procrastinating a lot. Mm-hmm. When I woke up this morning, actually, my first instinct is to, like, open up Twitter and just scroll and just look at things. Mm-hmm. And then if I get bored of that, I'm like, oh, I should be doing something else. I close Twitter and open up Instagram. It's so weird.
You think, oh, it'll just be 5 minutes. Like, I'll just do a quick check in the morning. And then 20 minutes later, you're like, oh my gosh, but I can't stop. So, yeah,
I personally find it takes me longer to get out of the door in the morning because I do spend probably 5 to 10 minutes checking social media or looking at some type of app. And I've also, like, I have to delete Instagram off my phone at least 1 or 2 times during the school year because I just feel like I cannot focus. Mm-hmm. And by deleting it, I feel like I'm able to focus better. I've also, like, most of my other social media apps, I've at least remove them from the home screen. Because you guys know how Apple has, like, you can select an app and then remove it. So the only way you can find it is by searching it. So you can still open it, but it takes, like, just one more step. And you wouldn't think it makes a difference, but I do feel like I look at things less and it allows me to better focus.
Mm-hmm. You have more willpower than I. I've done that for YouTube and I'll put it right back.
He said, I hate this.
But yeah, one of the articles we read was about how procrastinatory social media usage predicts enhanced anxiety. And they looked at Facebook mostly, but I think it applies to social media in general. Basically talking about how they aim to prove that using social media or using Facebook for short-term satisfaction and not using that time to, like, study for a test or something like that leads to anxiety. And it's not the case that having anxiety makes you use social media. So that's what they tried to prove, which I think they, you know, tried to do a good job with. There were some issues with the study, but.
Aaron and I were both questioning some of the methodology. Yeah,
but I still think it has, it really says something powerful because I think that a lot of times when I have a test upcoming test or whatever, and I schedule out, okay, this is the time I need to study so I can be ready for this test. And I end up wasting a lot of that time or all that time on social media or something. Obviously, I'm going to feel anxious about that.
Yeah.
But I think that the key for me is just separating time to study and time to relax so that I can do social media. Because even if I use the same amount of time I would have on social media, but I wasn't also trying to study during that time, like, you know, I wouldn't have that anxiety for the mm-hmm. test.
I was realizing that, like, the past few weeks I had been kind of feeling that way, like a little stressed or like I didn't have enough time during my day to do things. And I actually, like, sat down last week and I thought about, like, why I was feeling that way, because I was like, I do have a lot of time in my day and I'm not really doing anything that should stop me from getting things done. And what I realized is I had a lot of, like, small breaks in my day where I had maybe like 30, 40 minutes to do something. But instead of, like, blocking that time as like, oh, I'm going to do this for that 40 minutes, I was like, oh, well, I only have 30 minutes, so, like, might as well look at Instagram or watch a YouTube video. And then that was causing me to procrastinate doing work so that I was feeling a lot more stressed. And I think this week, since I started to time block things a little better and say, okay, not just, oh, during this 30 minutes, I'm going to do work, but, like, during this 30 minutes, I'm going to write the abstract of my lab report. And, like, I'm going to sit down and do as much as I can in that 30 minutes. And, like, I go into it having a plan. I'm much less likely to reach for my phone and much less likely to then procrastinate my work and then feel anxious.
Yeah, I think procrastination, and, like, I think it's important to note that a lot of different things can make you procrastinate. So we're not saying mm-hmm. that social media is unique in that. Mm-hmm. But I think there are kind of two ways that it is unique. So one is the fact that it can be designed to be so addictive just because of, like, the medium it's on your mm-hmm. phones and all the different technology-related tools they can use to try and make you more addicted to it. I think the other one is just how integrated it is into our lives. So like if I procrastinate by reading a book or watching TV, like I can go away from my TV or I can put down my book and go to a different location. But when social media is on your phone, you have it with you all the time. So it's kind of hard to get away from the temptation to procrastinate. And it's also hard, I mean, even like deleting or removing apps. I know that I have chats with friends on Snapchat where we coordinate like a lot of the things that we do or like when we hang out. And I wouldn't want to miss a message from that. So we can't even necessarily silence certain social media because it's been built into the way that we do other things in our lives. I think that makes it really challenging. Me personally, there are times when I'm at home where I'll like take my phone out of my pocket and put it to the side and cover it with something just because I feel like having it on my hip and like feeling it actually makes me more likely to check it, which is kind of crazy. But I think that's the, like the level that social media and technology has become like addictive or like a big part of our lives.
You also have phantom vibrations.
Yeah. Phantom vibrations are a real thing. Yeah. It's so
That's
crazy.
That's been happening to me a lot lately. I don't know what it is. I think my phone keeps ringing and it's not ringing. And it makes me feel like really, really like, I don't know, like I'm crazy. Yeah, that's been happening to me. But what you were saying, Jason, about not being able to turn your phone off or turn social media off, I think that is big because as college students, I'm on my floor GroupMe. I know people who have my Snapchat that don't have my number. I know people on Instagram that don't have my number. So if any of those people need to reach out to me, then I have to have these social media notifications on. Especially the floor GroupMe thing. I try to silence it sometimes. But I know that if any emergency were to happen and I were to not know, then it would be my fault for turning GroupMe notifications off.
Like the one time that I decided to take a shower during the fire drill because I didn't look at the GroupMe.
That's tough. Yeah. But I think another interesting thing about like the social media and I guess this applies to technology more broadly, is like we've become increasingly, like our assumption is increasingly that everyone is available for us all the time. And like it's a function of social media allowing us to connect better with people. Like I can text Aaron and instantly send him a message and that's great. But I think sometimes we build on this assumption that we need to respond instantly and that everyone else is going to respond instantly. And in a lot of ways, I think this doesn't let us like enjoy our alone time or like have time where we're completely away from things because we feel this pressure to respond instantly to every message that comes to us. And I think messages are also like more tailored to like make us respond instantly. And in some ways, I think this is kind of harmful to how we interact with each other, that we can't kind of have this time where we're completely away and like we're on our own.
Yeah. I also think, I don't know, social media as a form of communication in general takes away that in-person aspect, which I think half of our communication comes from our hand gestures or whatever. And I feel like for me, the way I handle like direct messages and stuff, sometimes I used to, you know, wait days or something before I responded. That's not a good practice. So I don't think it's necessarily saying that. But like if you're in the middle of doing something, completely stopping everything you're doing and immediately responding doesn't have to be necessary. And it somewhat allows you to take your time and think about your response and stuff like that. Even when you're like responding to someone's post or something, taking your time to respond.
Yeah. It's funny because when you were saying that, I was like, oh, whenever I'm doing work, I feel that pressure sometimes to respond. But like if I'm driving or doing something where like I'm not supposed to be like texting and stuff, I don't feel that pressure. Like I'm like, oh, I'm driving, so I don't have to like respond to them right now. I don't have to read this message. But like if I'm sitting down to do my work, I don't view that the same way, which is interesting.
Maybe that's a part of like this critical engagement that we're like talking about is making ourselves unavailable sometimes to our phones and to social media the way that Ashley you were talking about. When you're driving, you don't even consider looking at your phone. I think that maybe we should start looking at other aspects of our lives when we're spending time with people mm-hmm. in person or when mm-hmm. we're doing work that must get done that day, that is like driving. We cannot be on social media at that mm-hmm. time and let it be okay.
Yeah. And I think this kind of goes back to procrastination as well. I've been thinking about this a lot recently, actually, is that like text messaging is not designed for you to have a conversation. Text messaging is really designed for me to send something. Like if I have one thing I need to tell you or a few things I need to tell you, mm-hmm. to send that to you, have you get it and be able to acknowledge it without having to do a call in case you're busy or something like that. Mm-hmm. But when we use text messaging and similar social media for conversation, it's so broken up and consumes so much time and focus that I think it kind of makes it harder for us to get done what we need to get done. Because if I'm having a text conversation with someone, I could easily text someone for an hour and not actually talk about that much. But even if there's only a message sent every couple minutes, my attention is constantly focused on that. If I'm working, I'm thinking, have they responded yet? Even mm-hmm. though I know my phone's gonna go off. So I think that's kind of another, like, our technology is getting better at making us procrastinate because of the way that it facilitates our conversations.
Just you saying that reminds me of, like, even yesterday when I was doing work, I think just me texting somebody and like constantly checking my phone, like, did they respond? No, they didn't. And I go back to reading when I'm supposed to read. Then I'm not paying as much attention. I just realize that happens all the time to me.
Yeah, I think that's hard because I enjoy talking to my friends. And I think I got into the habit, you know, we were talking about the habits during the quarantine period of texting people. Like, that's how you connected with people. And now that we're able to spend time in person again, I forget that I can text people and ask them if they want to spend time with me instead of let's have a conversation over text. And I think that is something that I have that's a habit that I need to start working on because I want to spend time with people in person, but it's so easy to just send them a message on like Snapchat or send them a photo of what I'm doing that day instead of actually spending some quality time with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know where I was going with this, but quality time, yes. So I was thinking about how you were saying when you text people, like you realize that you want to spend more time with them in person. But something I realized this summer is that I never called my friend. So like I would text Taryn or like another friend and ask like, hey, how's your summer going? Like, how are you doing? Like these little check-ins just to like make sure everything's good. But I never would reach for my phone and call Taryn and have an actual conversation with her, which is interesting because I also find myself a lot less likely to respond to a message when I'm going to have to like put a lot of thought into it. And I'd much rather just take 2 minutes to just say what I'm thinking versus like typing out this paragraph. But
yeah, I think it's also interesting to talk about, like you talk about like typing out long responses to text. I think one of the interesting things about text and a lot of social media is because it's asynchronous, it really lets you like curate your response, mm-hmm. which I think is good and bad. The good aspect of it, I think, is that obviously if I want to say something and it's like something important, I can make sure that I say it correctly. Mm-hmm. But I think that also kind of trains us to be anxious about like our normal social interaction and feel like if my response isn't perfect or if I haven't fully thought this out, that like it's going to be the worst thing in the world. Yes. If this person thinks I have a dumb response or I say something dumb, and they probably do not care or don't care that much. Mm-hmm. So I think that this kind of like being able to curate an image, which kind of comes back to social norms theory as well, mm-hmm. is like something we have to be aware of, that like you don't have to curate your image all the time or be hyper aware about these things, because in reality, when you're in person and you're talking to someone, they're not going to like be too critical of like whether this is a perfect response or whether you're like look perfect today. I promise you, like, people don't notice as much as you think they notice.
That's good. That's something I've learned as I've gotten older, is that people don't notice as much as you think they notice. So if I walk around with a sweatshirt on one day instead of like a really nice outfit or a dress or something, it's okay. No one's going to think that I didn't put effort in that morning. It's not going to be a big problem.
And if someone's opinion of you diminishes because you wore a sweatshirt one day, they're not worth your time anyway.
Facts.
Yeah. But I think we did talk about that a little bit, about how expectations are changed because of social media. Like, our what we see online, sometimes we think that's like the expectation in real life and everyday life, but it's really not. And so it's just okay to be fully who you are and just not care.
Yeah, especially with body image, I think. Like, mm-hmm. Especially if you scroll through Instagram all day and you walk outside and you don't see anything of what you just saw on Instagram represented in the world.
That's so true. That is so, so true. You just scroll on Instagram, you see one thing, and then you look around and you don't see that. So, yeah, it's really tough. Again, critical engagement, I think, is mm-hmm. is the major takeaway here. And I'm very grateful that we all spent the time looking into this research and having these conversations, because social media is a part of our lives and it's not going to go away anytime soon. Nor should it necessarily. So we just need to learn as people how to engage with it in a way that is not harmful to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think we're about to close out here and get back to doing hours and hours of schoolwork and loving college life. But does anyone have any final thoughts before we close the podcast?
I don't think so.
I think you're good.
All right. If no one else has any final thoughts, I just want to share why I hate LinkedIn so much. So, LinkedIn is professional social media where you put up like your professional job profile. And what I hate about LinkedIn is LinkedIn shows me friends posts, but also like a lot of random posts or posts that friends have liked in my main feed. So LinkedIn is like a constant stream of professional success or people with these crazy professional stories. And it also sends me notifications that don't have anything to do with my friends about like the top 10 ways to get a job. And it's like, I don't need you trying to draw me in LinkedIn, because if I was actually interested in the top 10 ways to get a job, I would just look it up. I don't go to you for articles. I'm on you because I want employers to see me. So that's enough of my LinkedIn rant. I hate LinkedIn. I deleted it off my phone. Don't message me on LinkedIn.
I call sign every word.
All right. So thank you for listening to our conversation today. We hope you enjoy it and hope you got something useful out of it. Share our podcast with your friends and family. Be on the lookout for our next episode and our merch. I'm kidding about the merch.